introduce our first speaker, which is Hella V. from Marin County. This is Hella.
Thanks, Wilma. And I'm Hella, I'm an alcoholic. And I'm extremely nervous. I've never spoken at in front of a mic, being taped before, and having to tell the truth all at the same time. So, and that is, you know, just to even have the topic of practicing these principles in all my affairs, that I even have some principles today to live by is unbelievable, because I never did. You know, I kind of made up the rules as I went along in my drinking days. And I knew the rules for everybody else, and mine were different. You know, I didn't stop at stop signs. I didn't do anything that other people thought everybody else had to do, because I was different. And today I try really, really hard to live by the 12 steps and the spiritual principles of this program, because it saved my life. One thing, I'm holding a little stone here in my hand, which is from my daughter, who a little over five years ago, when I went to court and didn't know what was going to happen due to two DUIs, she said, if you get nervous, rub it, and maybe you'll feel better. And it has helped tremendously since, and I still have it. She also enclosed a picture and said, if they happen to keep you, you won't forget me. And you'll think about me, and I'll miss you, and when you come home, I'll sleep with you. And it says it right here in the little envelope and note that I still have. You know, so that was what got me here, and, you know, I didn't think that I had any influence over other people's lives. But when I think of what my daughter responded with, I definitely see now that I had a big influence over how she was thinking and what she was going through. So today I've learned to show up and be different, and tell the truth, pay attention, and let go of the outcomes. And my only goal today is to, first of all, stay sober myself, and also, if I can say one thing that maybe will inspire you to stay sober today, then I think I've really done a great deal, because before, when I was drinking, I didn't help myself, and I certainly didn't help anybody else. So I want to, you know, I try to keep it real simple. My husband, I've been married for 22 years, and he has always been kind of a stable part in our marriage. And I've been kind of all over the place. You know, I drank, and I was over here, and lying, and stealing, and ending up in jail, and having affairs. And he was right down the middle of the road, being very tolerant and understanding and patient with me. And I hated it, because I was always looking for a fight, and I was always looking to prove him wrong. And he wasn't willing to play that game. And it just bugged me. And he had all these friends, and he had all these people who really loved him. And it wasn't me, and I didn't like it. But he stuck around with me, and was patiently waiting. And then I get sober, and I get a spiritual awakening, whatever you may call it, and I have a new set of principles. And now I'm going to teach him these new principles. And he's been fine all along, but of course now he needs my God, and he needs my program, and he needs all this. And he patiently said, yeah, I know. And he's nodding. He's not changing, but he's nodding. And he's, I know, and he's letting me now be way out in this right field over here. And slowly but surely, I'm kind of coming back into the middle, and we're going down the same road a little bit. And, you know, we've been married 22 years. It's been a long time waiting. And so if I ever get a little short with him, I got to remember how long he waited for me. And now it's my turn to be a wife and be there for him. And it's not about what I'm going to get, and for him to be my husband and my daughter and my this and my that. I need to be a wife. I need to be a mother. I need to be all these things I didn't know how to be, or I didn't trust how to be. So that's a... Okay. All right. Thank you. Can you hear it now? No? It's not on. Can you hear now? Nothing's on? Thank you.
Okay, can you hear now? This is not comfortable. Especially talking about my husband. No, I better switch the topic now. Can you hear anything now?
No.
Hello? Hello? Okay, I'll try and be loud and quick and pray a little bit. At work, I have become a different person also. The way it happened for me, the day I was struck sober a little over 5 years ago, where a voice came in and said, "Hela, you don't ever have to drink again." And that is just my story, and it's my experience, and something happened dramatically in my body, inside of me that day. And that morning when I went to work, I had comments from people saying, "What happened?" I thought they knew I'd been to jail and or to the sheriff's place on a DUI, but they saw a dramatic change in me. And that was the psychic change, or whatever you may call it, that they talk about in the big book about a spiritual experience. And from then on, I have spent so much time, I've spent my time praying to fill all my new stuff with the principles of this program. I don't want to fill it with old stuff like resentment, anger, blaming, gossiping. I can't afford that because it reminds me too much of when I was drinking. That behavior leads to a drink for me. And the way everything was emptied for me that morning, I don't ever want to forget that. And it was almost like I got to a point where that flame inside, I got to that ever light flame that's always burning of true love inside. It's not that it got lit. It has always been lit inside of me, but I had so many walls of denial and stuff around it that morning when all those walls came down, I felt what it was like to be alive for the first time, and I don't ever want to forget that. And I'm trying, through the 12 steps, I've been able to at least once, twice a day, every single day, to be in touch with that. And that is the most incredible place to be. And then I can go out again, and I do my own stuff, and my ego comes back. But I know there's always a voice inside of me saying, "Helen, you're going to be okay." And that voice that I said yesterday is not going to keep me okay today. I need to keep practicing these principles every single day. And it's about letting go. It's about, I can't, God can, so let him. You know, those easy 1, 2, 3 steps that we hear about, it's really, really simple. But I want to take it back many times in my will. But again, coming back to work, my work, I teach tennis, and I'm very, very happy and fortunate that I can give back in my work what I learned here in the program. So my teaching has changed tremendously because I always taught from fear and that it wasn't going to be good enough and I could never give them enough for their money. And now it's much more out of love for the game, and instead of one day at a time, we play one point at a time. You know, I can use every single thing I learn in here at my work. And people are coming away saying, "You've changed my life." So, you know, if I die today, I know I've touched a lot of people's lives, and that feels good because I've touched them in a positive way, and I'm proud of it. To be just one or two people who maybe feel better that day when they come home from having taken the lesson. Their forehand may still suck, and their backhand may not be anything. But they feel better about themselves. Something, I've touched something by just talking about my experience. I don't tell them what to do. Somehow we learn in here it's by our experience for people to get in touch with their own inner self, and that's what it's all about. And I I do try. When it said in the book, you know, practice these principles in all our affairs, I've never been one that does half-measured. I mean, I'm like all or nothing. I was full-blown alcoholic, drinking actively. Now I'm full-blown recovered alcoholic, and I don't drink no matter what. But I also follow every single thing that everybody has taught me here, because I think I'm just so scared of going out again. You know, it's such a privilege to be here, and I have no idea what time it is now because I'm sitting up here on a funny spot. But I think pass it on right now to somebody else. But I want to tell you how grateful and how incredible thankful I am to this program. I don't take any credit for any of this that has come along my way. You guys are manifestations of my higher power constantly. It's not a God out there. It's everywhere. It's up to me to let go and breathe and let the miracles happen. You know, they're happening all the time, but I'm just usually so busy running around trying to find them that I miss them along the way. So if I can stop and, you know, smell the roses and really enjoy what's in front of me, I don't need to go 5 miles over there to find it. It's right here. Wherever I am, there I am, and there's something for me to learn. And, you know, if I'm waiting in line in traffic, if I'm in the grocery store, if there's something where I am where maybe I'm going somewhere else, something comes to my mind saying, Haley, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Why don't you just be here right now? Okay. At that moment, I'm okay. Anytime I try to flee into the future and say, I wish I was over there, misery starts to happen. I'm right here, and right now I'm okay. I'm not drinking. I'm alive. And maybe I can smile to somebody who's next to me, who maybe I had a rotten day, you know, to get out of myself. And I've learned things like that. I always used to have you guys smile first, and then I would smile back. Didn't get very far that way. So, you know, I'm learning different things, and I'm not perfect at it at all. But I, every morning, try to ask for guidance. Thy will, not mine, be done. And the Serenity Prayer, I live by that. Prayers are constant in my life. I want to say, I don't know, how much time do we have? 3 minutes. I want to say something really quick. Last month I was in South Africa for tennis. I was sent by the U.S. to represent this country, and this is not the country I'm from. And it was an incredible honor to play and compete for the U.S. sober, dealing with a whole bunch of people who might as well be alcoholics, because I think in tennis, you know, it's like egomaniacs with an inferiority complex. In order to believe you can win, you have to kind of pretend that you're really good, and inside you're really, really shaky. That's the MO for a tennis pro. So, you know, when I found alcohol, I was like, yeah, I'm home. But now I don't have alcohol, but I still sometimes can get into that thing of old behavior and big front and very, very shattered inside. And I took it as a 12-step call. I was in solution every single time. People are gossiping. People are bragging on others to feel better. And it's like, come on down this road. It's really cool. And it's like, no, I don't do that anymore. And it was very, very hard. But I knew better, because I cannot afford to go down that road. And I, you know, I just took it as they were asking me to sponsor them. And I gave them solutions back whether they wanted to hear it or not. Because I had to stay sober. You know, to be a month away from home and home group and sponsor and family, it was really hard. But I didn't drink, and I did really well as far as the results. But that was only based on every single action playing one point at a time and staying out of the outcome, you know. So I was so thankful every single day that I was able to do that. And ended up with a safari where when somebody said, how was it? And I answered, I don't think I had a distracted thought. That is an unbelievable statement. If I can go 4 days and be present, because I'm in with the animals and the nature, and they are the ones who made me be present, because if we're not present with the animals, it's their territory, guess what could happen? I might just not come back. So it was an instant just be there. The rangers don't worry about tomorrow. They don't worry about this morning. They worry about the elephants this afternoon. And just hanging around them and picking up on their attitude and way of living life, it was so much like being in meetings. So I didn't feel deprived from meetings when I came home, but I felt out of practice in listening and being at meetings. So I really have gone to a meeting every day since I've been back, and got in touch with my sponsees and back in touch with the program, and that's how I live my life today. So I hope you guys keep coming back no matter what. Thank you.
Thank you, Hella. For the people who walked in a little bit later, we are passing the Nasket basket, and if you have a question, there's only two of them, so I'm sure that some of you that walked in might have a question. I'm going to pass it one more time, and then if you could pass it on back forward so we can, I'll read some of the questions, okay? And now we will introduce to you Kim, Kimberly.
Hi everybody, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Kimberly. Can you hear me? It's not working. Okay. Wow, welcome to the Women's Conference. What a day. I just hope for all of you that you get out of this conference what I always get out of, no matter what level I'm participating in. I always feel particularly inspired and empowered, you know, going throughout this day and sharing myself with women that I see every day, women that I've never seen before. It's just an outrageous, incredible experience. Actually, somewhat like the experience of going to the International Conference in San Diego. This actually does compare a lot with it because it's all women, and it's just a huge thing for me. Okay, practicing these principles. Boy, you know, God has a sense of humor. I'm honored to be asked to speak at the Women's Conference on this topic. And if you had been living in my mind and my body for the last week and a half, to be speaking on this topic is a very frightening thing. I actually saw my sponsor at a meeting the other night. She said to me, "You are like a missile just flying out of control. You're speaking at a conference in 2 days, and I don't think I want to walk in the room." I was like, I know, okay. So anyway, practicing these principles, you know, sometimes for me it's an automatic, it's without a thought in a day. It's just something that comes automatic, and I'm living it, I'm working it. And sometimes I'll tell you what, I've got to talk myself into it, walk myself through it, no matter what I do, I can't do it, you know. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, where I am at the time, where I am in my program, how connected am I. For the most part, I'm glad to say, at this point in my sobriety, most of the time I'm pretty connected. You know, I know what it is that I need to do to stay sober today. More than anything, I think the one thing that I've always had since I've gotten sober, since I came to these rooms, is the desire to not drink. That has never left me. All my other stuff and character defects have come in and do it my way or whatever, but the desire to not drink has never left me. When I got here, you know, qualify real quickly, I've got 5 drunk drivings. CPS has been at my house 7 times to remove my children from me. Being the good little alcoholic drug addict that I was able to make it look good, and, you know, there's no reason to remove these kids from this home. The reality is I did lose a daughter to this disease because she refused to live with me. I lost her by way of courts. Her father came in and took her. I dropped her off at school one day. You know, every other Friday, he'd drive up and pick her up and keep her for the weekend. And when I dropped her off that Friday morning, it was like, it's the first time I ever remember really getting a gut feeling. And I came home, and I sat on the end of the bed, and I started to cry. And my boyfriend said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "She's not coming back." And he said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "I just had this feeling she's not coming back." "Oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it." And the next morning at 9:15 in the morning, I got served papers. And that was the first time in my whole life that I didn't go, "That SOB, I'm going to court, I'm going to get her back, I'm going to fight it," and da-da-da, you know, get into my fighting mode. I knew the gig was up. I knew that I didn't stand a chance walking into a courtroom to fight it. And I also knew that it was a matter of time before I'd lose my other daughter. And with that, I ended up going into Marine Services for Women. And what I've learned since I've gotten here has been extremely incredible. Today, my daughter's sitting in the room, 2 years sober, herself. Yeah. And I'm going to be a grandmother. And I'm one of 10. 9 of us are alcoholic addicts. 5 of us are sober. And, you know, if that hasn't been a journey in itself, you know, practicing, you know, there was a time after I got sober that it was a lot easier to communicate with my drunk brothers and sisters than it was my sober ones. When you get everybody, you know, working their own program and their own opinions and practicing these principles, how do I do this? I work for the director of social services for the county, and I work with CPS every day. And that is a miracle, an absolute miracle to me. I work with the woman that came into my home who I finally called one day and told her the truth. She's the one that sent me to Marin Services for Women. We're very close friends, very close friends. I'm very fortunate in that in my job, you know, in this time of welfare reform, you know, part of my job is adult protective services, children's protective services, welfare, food stamps, the whole bit. And, you know, the amazing thing is that I see a lot of us every day at work. You know, I see a lot of you coming in, just getting sober, applying for benefits, you know, doing what you need to do to get yourself going. And oftentimes I'll be walking down the hall in high speed, focused on my little world, just, you know, ready to crawl out of my skin, and I'll run into one of you applying for food stamps or something and say, Kimberly, I need help, I can't do this, what, you know, da-da-da. And it's like a little mini meeting. I'm really fortunate in that area that I get to work with this day in and day out, you know. It's in my family day in and day out. Recovery is what I'm about today. I've had some, you know, for some of us, and I have one particular friend in mind that I'm thinking of when I share this, and this is just me. You know, for some of us, the work is a little harder than others. That's been my experience with some, you know, some of the people that I'm in contact with. And I can remember one day sitting on my girlfriend's porch, and she always shares that she's had a relatively smooth sobriety, and sobriety's been easy. She hasn't really had any, you know, real big bumps or anything, and she's very fortunate about that. And then I, on the other hand, have had, you know, had some things go on and that I've had to work through. And I remember sitting on her deck one morning, and of course I had like 3 big things going on, and we were sitting there and we were talking about it, and she was saying to me, God, I just, you know, I admire you, I don't know how you do this. And I looked at her and I said, you know, I said, I had this realization last night, and I said, and really, I've come to the conclusion that God really loves me. And she said, yeah, he does. And I said, but with that, I also came to the realization that he hates you, you know. And we just sat there and we laughed it off. And you know, I have friends in my life today that are there for me no matter what. Humor is a huge part of my sobriety. I hang out with some very, very funny women, and I wouldn't have it any other way, because in the face of tragedy, when I thought I couldn't laugh again, I could. Probably the roughest time I would say in my sobriety was last 2 years ago. Yesterday was my father's birthday and the second anniversary of his death. And my father was an alcoholic. And I'm going to share this with you just because it just was so unbelievable to me when it happened how powerful alcoholics are. I remember my father all his life joking about, you know, I'm going to go out the same day I came in and all this kind of stuff. Well, he died on his birthday. I mean, how powerful is that? You know, I couldn't believe. It was such a weird, eerie feeling when I got the call that he died. And then I laughed, like, oh, my God, he went out the same day he came in. He called his destiny from day one. Anyway, that was rough. There was a lot of relief in that for me that he died, because he died an alcoholic, and he died in that insanity in our head that we have all lived, that got us here. He was never fortunate enough to get here. So there was relief on one end that I knew that he wasn't suffering in his head. And then 9 months later, my mother died. And that was probably one of the most difficult things I've ever gone through in my life. My mother was my world to me. I'm going to say this because I have a sister in the room, and I know she's going to know exactly what I'm talking about. for some reason last night when I was thinking about practicing these principles in all of our affairs, what kept coming to mind was, you get out of life what you put into it. That to me was like fingernails going down a chalkboard. I would go out and drink over that statement. I would go out and beat somebody up over that statement. My mother said that all her life. And I think that I was uncomfortable with it, and it would drive me insane. I always took it as a criticism that I wasn't good enough, and it was always a put down. And for a long time, I realized that it bothered me because I didn't know what she was talking about, and then it bothered me because I knew exactly what she was talking about, you know? And that was when I was off drinking and punching people over that statement, and for some reason, that is what comes to mind when I think of practicing these principles in all of our affairs. When I went through this time over losing my parents, 2 years ago. I also have a brother who's a paraplegic who has tried to commit suicide several times. And that was a really, really trying time. And, you know, the one thing that kept me sober and kept me sane through the entire ordeal was the basics. The basics, you know, going to meetings, talking to my sponsor, connecting with my support group, working with the people that are in my life. I didn't feel like it, and I can describe, the best I can describe to you is at this really low point that I hit grief, and I was in grief counseling, and I would get up every morning, and it was like I was trudging. I was actually trudging. And I would meet with one sponsee one day a week for 2 hours. And I would just sit in my head all day long going, oh my God, I love her, but she's coming. I can't work with her. I have nothing to give. I can't do this, because I was so consumed with grief, and I was just so, my feelings were all over the map, and I really didn't know what the heck was going on with me. And every Tuesday when she came over and we met for those 2 hours, that was the only 2 hours in an entire week that I was focused and could do the work that I was supposed to do. And every time she'd leave, I'd go, wow. That was the greatest 2 hours I had. But by the time next Tuesday would come, I was back in that space going, I can't do this, I don't want to do this. And then once again, okay, wow. You know, and that just solidified to me, you know, that no matter what you're going through, as long as you stay God conscious, and God is a very big part of my life, and I've had a couple fights with him, and, you know, I remember my sponsor calling one day. My boyfriend was leaving the state. He was moving. And this was a pretty great relationship, and I was pretty content in it, and I thought that, you know, this was it. And we'd been together about a year and a half, and he made the decision to move to Florida. And so I tried to be really big and adult about it and was like, okay, I can do this. You know, it's not about me. And the next day I was at work, and my boss said to me, are you okay? You don't look good. And I said, I'm fine. And about a half hour later, I was sitting at my desk, and it's like one of these scenarios you hear about somebody passing out in a plate at the dinner table. I was at my desk working, and all of a sudden my head just hit the counter, and I went, and everybody just gathered around, and I'm in a glass cubicle, and I won't look up because I know everyone's looking at me, you know, and my boss walks out and says to me, can I have a moment with my secretary, please? And she hands me some Kleenex and says, can you drive? And I said, yeah, I'm on my way out of here now, and, you know, do you want to talk about it? No, I can't. And I left, and I went out to Stinson Beach, and I spent 4 hours out there sobbing. I was so puffy. I was speaking that night, and I had to call Mary and ask her to go tell my story for me, please. You know, to go speak. I couldn't. I was just an absolute mess. And my sponsor called me and said, what is going on? And I'm rattling all this stuff on, and she said, where is God? And I said, we're in a fight. And I spent 4.5 hours at the beach telling him how mean he is. And she said, get on your knees and talk to God. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll call you back. No, you get on your knees right now with me, and you talk to God. You know, and I did. And amazingly, it was like, boom, it was gone. It was like, I'm okay. And, you know, I was able to go through this transition with him and know that he wasn't leaving because he didn't love me or because the relationship was over. He was leaving because he needed to do what he needed to do for himself, and it wasn't about me. And when I got to that place, you know, so I get to know what cybersex is about, you know. We email each other all the time, you know. He's been gone a month and a half. He's here right now for 10 days, you know. It, really. But to think that, you know, when I'm not working a program and when I'm not doing the basics and taking care of myself, not only do I have nothing to give back to you, but I'm an absolute mess. If there's anything that... What time is it? Oh, I'm doing pretty good here. Family. Oh, okay. My family. Yeah. I used to be so proud to be in my family when I was drinking with them all and fighting with them all, and it was a great thing. And you know what? I remember before I went into treatment going to one of my brothers, I'm this person that I don't know what's going to happen to me, and I'm afraid that we're not going to have a relationship. And he looked at me and he said, well, you know, he said, go in for 30 days. Try it. If you like it, keep going. If you don't, you can always come back out. And the truth is, Kim, I don't really like you right now anyway. You know? I run when I see you. And I was like, okay. Well, that brother's 8 months sober today. And, you know, that to me is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. I have a sister that had just recently gone through some hard times. And when it was going on, I was, you know, kind of in a little bit of contact. And every time I would get in contact and talk about it, I felt a whole lot of insanity, and I couldn't tell what it was, but I felt like I wasn't getting the real deal. I wasn't getting the truth. Stuff was going on. And what do I do about it? How do I stay out of the middle of being sucked into this stuff and keep myself sane and live my life? And I chose to step back and do nothing and take care of myself and do what I know how to do and do the things that I know that have kept me sober today. And that was really hard because it felt somewhat to me like I was abandoning her. And the truth is I'm sure that she felt that. I know she felt that. She told me that. And, you know, but by stepping back and just doing what I do and living my life the way that I live it and making decisions for myself, she's back here today, and she's in the room today, and, you know, she called me. The phone was, you know, when the time was right. Here she is again, and I get to be in her life today, and that's a miracle. One of the principles that I live by today, it's just like my everyday thing. I want to share one thing that just came to mind. I'm sorry about this. I remember being in a meeting one day, and Ruby said, when you get out of bed in the morning, you roll out of bed on your knees, and you talk to God. Because if you step out of bed, the minute that foot hits the floor, and you go to the bathroom and put on the coffee, you're not going to get on your knees. And that hit me like a brick, because that happens to me every morning. You know, I jump up to go turn off one of the kids' alarm clock or something, and I'm off and running. And I don't do it every day, but I certainly try to roll out of bed on my knees. And for me, that was great advice. And I heard that in a meeting through the time of a lot of grief, and it really helped get me through it. Back to where I was. What I was going to say, one of the things that I live by today is you get out of sobriety what you put into it. I am a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. That is not enough for me. I don't want to be just sober. I want to live my life. I don't want to live it feeling the way I did before. And the only way that I can do that is to be true to myself and practice these principles in all of my affairs and stay God conscious. And when I do that, I'm able to get into the action that I need to take every day in my life. So that's all I want to share with you is you get out of sobriety what you put into it. Thanks.